Katori Hall's play, The Mountaintop, puts its audience inside of Dr. Martin Luther King's room at the Lorraine Motel the night before his assassination. Restless and struggling with a speech, he orders some coffee. Enter the mysterious maid, Camille. The show is being performed at Aurora Theater in downtown Lawrenceville, and I spoke with the director, Eric Little, and actress Cynthia Barker. I began by asking how close the play gets to actual events and what we might glean from a fictionalized account. Here's Eric.
I think that's hard to say because it's one of those things of who knows what happens that particular night before he was assassinated the next day. However, when people come to see it, they will recognize a lot of the things that they talk about, that Camille and Dr. King talk about. You know, he calls his wife and things of that nature and talks a little bit about his children. You might hear his, you know, Bernice, which is his real life, you know, daughter. And a lot of the things that he talks about the actual march that happened in Memphis right before, you know, this particular date and the Poor People's Campaign and him wanting to fight for the sanitation workers. So all of those things are true. But I think some of the other things that happen, they are all, you know, as you said, imaginary from what Katori Hall, what was in her mind.
Yeah, I think she does a really great job of incorporating those things mm-hmm. that we happen to know happened on April 3rd and, of course, tragically, April 4th. But she also incorporates other things that we know to be true, dealing with weather that happened in around the time, but she puts them actually on the day, April 3rd, in which it may not have happened that day, you know, but she uses things that were actually true. It just, she uses a lot of creative license, if you will, with facts, but fictionalizing them as well.
Cynthia, tell us more about the character of Camille.
I love Camille. Camille, as you said earlier, is a maid at the Lorraine Motel, and she comes in to bring Dr. King a cup of coffee. And Camille, to me, represents the voice of the people of Memphis. She represents a people who absolutely respect Dr. King, revere Dr. King, but are also frustrated and are restless and tired. And she also serves as a convention, if you will, of counterpoints to Dr. King's perspective on the movement. She counters a lot of his ideas and his ideologies on how we progress as a people, where Dr. King, in many ways, is about integration. Camille serves him a dish of counterpoints of people who feel a little bit differently. And I'm treading lightly here as not to give too much of the play away. I'm eyeing my director here. Yeah. But she is vibrant. She's funny. She's mm-hmm. candid. She's unapologetic. And she's just a really bold female voice.
In the New York production, which Kenny Leon directed,
yes.
Angela Bassett played the role of Camille,
mm-hmm.
and she was singled out for being maybe a bit too funny. I didn't see that production, mm-hmm. and I don't know if that was fair, but I remembered reading in the New York Times review mm-hmm. that Samuel Jackson's Dr. King was almost put into the role of straight man to her.
Mm-hmm.
How do you achieve a balance?
That is, we just had this discussion mm-hmm. the other day. It's a written, Camille has zinger after zinger. She is hilarious, but she also has really important things to say. You know, she's a visionary. She has some revolutionary things to say. And I just, in rehearsal, Eric was mindful to remind both Neil and myself, who plays Dr. King, to not fly past those moments where she's talking about the movement, where she's talking about what it is to be a woman, or and that's something that I was worried about, is I don't want people to walk away and go, oh my God, she's so funny. She is, but she is also so very smart, and I hope that people do that. So it is a very delicate dance.
And Katori Hall, the playwright, may have been trying to juxtapose mm-hmm. the difference in their class backgrounds,
oh,
after
definitely.
All. I mean, He was a highly educated mm-hmm. man
yes.
from a refined background, a church mm-hmm. upbringing, and here is a hardworking hotel maid.
Yeah, Katori, I mean, even within the script, and I don't have one to show you, she has written Kame's dialect or her syntax in the script, so you don't have to do a whole lot of work as an actor. She's kind of like laid the blueprint for you, you know. One of my favorite conjunctions, if you will, that Kame uses in the script that Katori gave her is yeen. You know, she says Y-E apostrophe E-N. And if you, that's you ain't even, you know?
Oh, okay.
So, you know, that's kind of in there. Yeah, but there is certainly an intraracial divide between Dr. King and Kame, both class and gender.
I think one of the things that people sometimes tend to forget is that when things make us laugh, we think that we're not thinking, or we think that that makes it less important.
Yes.
When sometimes the old cliche says the truth is found in jest. And so just because some of it is funny from the beginning to the end, whether it's a funny moment or a serious moment, it's still thought provoking. That's one of the things that I love about the piece as well with Kame. When she has those funny moments, she's still saying some very, truthful stuff.
Hard-hitting
that you're like, oh, whoa.
She says some of the most, I would say, controversial and challenging things in the play. And I think that Katori made Kame so funny because if she just stood flat-footed and said the things that she says and didn't have, like, something kind of lighten the mood after, I feel like people would dismiss her. And so I feel like her humor makes her a bit more palatable, unfortunately. And I feel even as a woman, if she stood flat-footed and says the things and has the thoughts that she has, people would dismiss her or dislike her.
And by extension, with Dr. King's occupying higher rung on the social class ladder,
yes,
he needs her plucky self to better familiarize him with perhaps a strain of the people whom he represents and to whom he dedicated his life, but maybe wasn't entirely immersed in that life himself.
Yeah, one of my favorite, I think it was in Citizen King, the documentary, and they talked about when he went to, was it Chicago? And he actually stayed the slums. He stayed amongst the people because even though he was serving them and hoping to be a representative for them, he didn't know what it was like to really be them.
Only that, where the play takes place and where he was killed at the Lorraine Motel, it was one of those, it was a respectable place, but it was actually, you know, inexpensive. And they chose a very inexpensive place. I think Neil was the one who said that he'd done some research, that they chose to stay there to save money because they, you know, same thing. They were on the, you know, they were traveling for the movement, you know, for the Civil Rights Movement, SCLC, and they didn't want to stay in places that were too expensive. They wanted to save money, and they wanted to, you know, support, you know, I think I'm pretty sure it's a black-owned business. So they were very aware. But as you're saying, Lois, I think it's one of the interesting points, too, about the class or the formally educated versus the informal education, because Kame is educated. She's just not formally educated Dr. King is.
It has nothing to do with intellect or insight, but there's a class difference.
Exactly. And
so this show doesn't shy away from MLK the man.
Oh, yeah.
With his all too human, with his human flaws and his struggles. Why is that important to portray on stage?
It will be hard for some people to see the human parts of Dr. King because I honestly shared this with the cast and even with a talk back the other night. When I first saw this play, there were some parts that were jarring for me because when I grew up, Dr. King was one of my heroes and still is one of my heroes. But that was before I knew, of course, all of the other parts of his human side. And I think the part of this, what's hard for us at times is because they are icons. If we start to learn the things that make them more like us, it should strengthen us. But what it does to us sometimes is it takes us back and it makes us like, oh my God, no, I can't believe he did that. But it's like he was human, you know? And I think it's very important because to me, you have to tell the truth and you have to be able to accept that truth.
I think that Katori giving us this, you know, fictionalized insight to Dr. King, the man who is flawed and fearful and frustrated and even disenchanted with the state of the country. Mm-hmm. I think when we so often want our heroes to be, you know, perfect, it extricates us from responsibility ourselves. Mm-hmm. And when we see that they are just like us, that they are just human beings who happen to do extraordinary things, it charges us to take responsibility in our own lives. You no longer have the right to say, I'm too this or I'm not enough of that. It's what makes Dr. King extraordinary is not that he didn't, he said yes to the calling and yes to responsibility in the face of these things, not in the absence of them.
Mm-hmm. Are there lines such as, where the hell is America going, or what the hell is happening to America?
Yes. Can I do this? It's
It's the opening line.
He says, I'll do my best, Neil. America is going to hell is the first line.
And I think why America is going to hell.
And I can always gauge which audience we have that night by that line. Either they burst in laughter or there's a couple chuckles or there's silence. And I'm like, all right, y'all, buckle up. That ain't nothing.
But you know what's funny to me, why that line is so so good is because, one, I think, and going with the research of Dr. King, what most people don't realize is towards the end of Dr. King's life, he was more radical. The whole Vietnam, you know, nobody wanted him to talk about Vietnam, even his own co-leaders. They didn't want him to talk about Vietnam, but he was like, no, I'm going to talk about it. So he became more radical. So the fact that the title of that speech, now, of course, I don't know if that was a real title of a speech that Dr. King was working on or if Katori Hall was just, you know, using creative license. But I think, to me, it is believable that he might have a speech say, why America is going to hell. And I think it's funny because, quite honestly, when we look at the state of America right now, that statement is so powerful that people resonated not only with 1968, but they resonate that statement in 2017.
Mm-hmm. I think the reason that particularly captivated me with that, the idea of the refined Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King saying, you know, what the hell is happening? I thought, what a wonderful glimpse into not how he really was thinking, because of course he really thought all of that exquisite oratory that, you know, so many of us can recite, but such a gut reaction. And mm-hmm. too, Eric, as you say, the man was evolving, and he mm-hmm. was so young when he was murdered. We forget that, too. Oh. But, hey, 1968, hell was not such a horrible word to be using in the context of a speech, and he was trying that out.
Yeah,
I think that frustration with that line, why America is going to hell, really emanates from his deep love for the place, not at mm-hmm. all a place of hatred or disdain, mm-hmm. but because he was just so frustrated. And I think we have another line in the play where he says, like, they're not listening. If they mm-hmm. could, if they could only understand that love is the answer, fierce, radical love. And so when he sees that, you know, we're still at odds and contention and not listening to one another, that is where that line really emanates from.
Eric Little, Cynthia Barker, it's really been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.